Mr. Cadman, Rail 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in South Kensington, London.
Which year was this?
1931.
So you're about 8 years old when the war started. Do you remember the war starting?
I do, yes.
Were you living in South Kensington then?
No, living in Fulham, South West 6.
Do you remember what your address was in Fulham?
Yes, yes. Crookham Road, 79. Crookham Road, Fulham.
Did the war affect you at first?
Not really, no. I suppose we thought it was a game, you know. We didn't take it too seriously. We had no experience of war.
I think you were evacuated, weren't you?
We were evacuated eventually, yes.
Not straight away?
We were, as far as I remember, we were evacuated more or less straight away. I can't tell you the exact date now.
Were you evacuated as an individual or as a whole school?
No, it was a whole school.
What do you remember about the day you were evacuated?
I remember congregating at school. I do remember we had gas masks issued in brown boxes. We were bused to a station. I think it was Waterloo. And we got up at Woking, which wasn't too far, really, half an hour trip. It's hardly worth evacuating from London to Woking, really. We were taken to a large centre somewhere in Woking, and then people, or local people, came along and selected which families they wanted to accommodate, more or less according to size, I think, and appearance. Well, we were we were four children and a mother only, and we went to, eventually, to a place in Lower Guildford Road, and it was the house of Dr. Kenneth Scott, and we lived in the gymnasium. Now, we didn't bring any bedding. I think we were sort of issued with beds and bed clothes, which was donated, as far as I know. Where it came from, I don't know, but I suppose good people sort of rallied around and donated bits and pieces. Anyway, we lived in the gymnasium for some time, and then eventually we moved to another house in Woking, which was quite a large house, and which was empty, and several families moved in together. And this was Dunblane in Constitution Hill, working opposite the park gates. No longer there, they've got a block of flats there now. And later on, they found us a house on the Hermitage Estate in that hill. And we moved there as just the family. And strangely enough, we also were given an evacuee. Although we were evacuated ourselves, we had an evacuee by the name of Pat Hyde, who lived with us as one of the family.
Was that a boy or a girl?
A boy.
And was that evacuee forced on you, or did your mother volunteer to have him?
I think we should just ask if we could make room for another one. I think people in those days, they didn't sort of, they didn't rebel against authority. You know, they more or less said, you know, it'd be a good thing if you did it, and people did it. I think sort of people pulled together more in those days.
How did your family get on with the people with whom you were billeted in Woking?
In Woking. There was conflict. There always was, because you had three or four families husbands weren't there. The women all had to use one kitchen. There was always a little bit of, not exactly conflict, but how can I put it? Resentment, maybe. You know, one wanted sort of priority and this sort of thing. I don't think that was a good idea. Of course, you had children, and some of the one lady in particular. She had, we always call him Uncle Al. Turned out he was Canadian, no relation at all, just a boyfriend, you know, and this was sort of, the women sort of, there was a lot of gossip, so it wasn't, I don't think it was a good idea.
So there were two meals to cook at the same time, you mean, in the kitchen?
Well, not more than two. I mean, you had, as far as I remember, there were four families. It was quite a large house, Dunblane. Not a good idea.
Was it an unhappy time for you as a schoolboy?
No, not at all. No, I think we had, the schooling was very good. We moved to a house in Claremont Avenue called Penlee. And as far as I remember, it was, most of the staff came from the Ashburton School, London. The school which I had no connection with at all. But a lot of the teachers were elderly, or retired. One man in particular had retired. And he taught us virtually everything. In other words, you didn't have a teacher for maths, English, geography. He taught a lot, but he was very good. And while I was there, I managed to pass the what they call today the 11 plus, which is then we used to call it the scholarship.
I remember.
So he taught us well. He even taught us algebra, things like that, which children tend not to be taught at school these days. So we really had quite a good all-round education. And this particular teacher was I would say he was in his 70s, because I think most of the younger teachers were either called up or called up, I suppose, in the forces or volunteered. And I'll go back a bit, because before I went to that school, we were sort of dotted around the area in various places. They just couldn't find a room at first. So we had classes in Scout Huts and Westfield Scout Hut, Westfield British Legion, Woking Football Clubhouse. And we did a lot of nature rambles, because you had a large amount of children and no room for them. So I suppose the ideal thing was to take them out somewhere to keep them occupied and on these nature rambles. So we used to go off in a file across a common schooling for, I suppose, about the first 6 months till things were properly organised. But when we finally got down to regular schooling, you know, we were taught quite well. So I don't think we suffered in that respect.
Was there any difference between the Fulham London boys and the Woking boys, or were they much the same?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We were evacuees, and of course, we noticed when we got to this part of the world, Woking, there was a definite Surrey accent. I mean, you don't notice it now. It was more, I suppose it's more, you'd say it was a London accent now, but I think if you go down to Hampshire, you hear what was then the Surrey accent. Because you've got to realise that not very few people living in Woking were born in Woking. There's three in this room now. None of us were born in Woking. And you can go down this road. Very few people born in the area have moved in. So the locals were easily recognised, of course we were in Londoners, and there was always that little bit of conflict between, you know, there was sort of evacuees and the Surreyites, you know. But I mean, it was soon forgotten, you know, because it was a fairly good game at first, and they grew tired of it.
There wasn't any difference in temperament or characteristics, apart from speech.
No, not that I knew of. No. Eventually, you did get to sort of mix with the local lads, and you know, you grew up amongst them, and that was it.
Did any bombs, in fact, fall in Woking?
Yes. Where we lived on the Hermitage Estate, a stick of bombs was dropped right across the estate, demolished two houses, which we always afterwards called the bombed houses, you know, because one of them was a sort of shortcut through to the Hermitage Woods. A man was killed in one house. I think the second house that was demolished wasn't, they were either down the shelters or they weren't in residence at the time. Now, a friend of mine, this is going off the subject slightly, but a friend of mine who lived opposite, Charlie Thurley, slept through it, believe it or not, a house being demolished on the side of the road. So I think you could say he was quite a heavy sleeper.
Do you remember the names of the streets where the bombs fell?
Yes. Let's have a look. I think that was Oak Way and Baton Avenue. Oak Way, I'll have to look on the map now. Oak Way, Baton Avenue. And a third bomb fell in Angus Road, under a house, and didn't explode. And I was told another bomb landed in the Woking crematorium. So I think there were four in all, but two definitely exploded.
Do you remember at what stage of the war the bombs fell?
No, let me think. No. I would think it sort of... I would think after the Battle of Britain, which was mostly daylight, I would think when it became a sort of more or less night bombing. So I couldn't tell you the exact date.
Sounds like the winter of 40-41, perhaps.
Yes, I think so.
Was the bombing at all frightening for you?
No. Not really.
Why not?
Well, I can't. The only time I was ever sort of frightened, I think, during the war was when one of these V2s motors cut out, and you know, you're waiting for the explosion, and then you know that was something. The unknown, but I think most of the time we went for it. We were more, as children, we were more, I suppose you'd say, excited, you know, about anything going on. Like
that would be V1, I think, if the motor cut on.
Yeah, the V1. Yeah, the V1.
Did you get V1s over Woking?
Not so many. We had one, as far as I know, one landed in Slowcock's Nurseries. Another one landed at Frimley. I think that was the one where the motor cut out. I'm told it landed at Frimley, which was quite a good way away, but it had about a ton of explosive, and everything shook. But no, I don't think any V1s directly on Woking, as far as I know. There may have been, of course, but they're the only two I know of.
Did you use shelters in the war?
We had an Anderson shelter indoors. We occasionally used that. We had a large shelter in the middle of Copley Close, where we lived. But we tended to go in the Anderson shelter. I think after a while, a lot of people didn't bother.
That was a shelter under the table, was it?
Yes. So, you know, we didn't think we were in much danger, I suppose.
Do you remember anything about shortages, food or otherwise, that you might have had during the war?
Well, of course, there were shortages. I know my mother spent a lot of time queuing, especially for meat. I think there were ample supplies of bread and potatoes. We used to grow our own. I did quite a lot of gardening, you know, as a lad. I remember growing sort of carrots and other vegetables. We kept chickens, ducks, bantams, rabbits. So we always had ample supplies of eggs. You could get this poultry meal. I think that was sort of supplied at the national. I think it was a sort of national product, which supplied for anyone who kept chickens. When I say national, you know, it was sort of I suppose it was subsidised in some way. You could always go to, in Woking Park, a lot of the flower beds were turned over to producing cabbage plants, especially if you go there and say, you know, can I have a bundle of broccoli or sprouts, and they give you, they say, you know, they say to you, don't want them to eat today sort of thing, they say, you know, you're going to plant them in your garden, and then they'd sort of give you a bundle of whatever you wanted, you take them home and plant them out. So, no, I don't think we really noticed any great shortages. I think sort of we did sort of, as far as I remember, you know, we got used to being without things like bananas and oranges, but of course you could always get other fruit. So we suffered in that respect.
Chocolate and sweets, did you?
Of course, they were rations. You had a ration book. You just got used to these things, just a way of life. It was always the way you were brought up. So, you know, you got sweets and you appreciated them, but you didn't get, you know, the sweets like you just get now, of course, you know, an unlimited quantity. So, you know, we quite a good life, quite an enjoyable childhood, I would say.
Any other things that stick out in your mind from the Second World War?
Well, of course, you see airplanes and planes crashing and anything like that. If there was a plane crash, we'd sort of make a beeline for it, you know. It's a bit more of it, but...
On your bike?
Bike or on foot. We did have a mosquito crash locally. It broke up in the air and crashed over a lot of what was the brickfields in the Hermitage Road, or Davies' Brickfield, and some went over, or some of it crashed into, or fell into Brookwood Hospital, damaged the roof of a house along the Lower Guildford Road, and as far as I know, the crew were Polish. They were killed, they fell into Brookwood Hospital ground somewhere. But for a long, long time afterwards, we found bits of balsawood from the mosquito, which we used for making model aeroplanes. And this fabric which they used, which when burnt, it used to sparkle. I don't know what, I suppose it was the dope in there or something. But we found bits of this aircraft for years afterwards all over the place. Other aircraft. Oh, one another fighter aircraft fell in, let me think now, by Knapphill Nurseries. A farm off the Chobham Road. As far as I understood, it was taking part in some sort of maneuvers with Canadian troops. Dummy strafe, you know, this sort of thing. And it crashed into a gentle hillside in a farm on the Chobham Road. And the pilot of that was killed. And I remember we went across we got there quite quickly, and there was nobody there at the time. It was still sort of, it was really sort of completely disintegrated, this plane virtually exploded. And a friend of mine found a cannon shell. And another friend found what he took to be a finger. So after that, we cleared off, you know, we didn't hang around anymore after that. And I do remember another plane crashing near the Bleak in Horsell, on the Common, Horsell Common there. And I believe that was either a Bow fighter, or it was a Bristol plane of some sort. I think it may be a Bow fighter. And that was coming into land at Fair Oaks. And that, I think the crew were killed in that. I remember we went over there and they put a rope around it. There was an RAF guard on duty, so he wouldn't let you anywhere near it. But all I remember was a sort of area of burnt common there.
The Bleak? What's the Bleak?
The Bleak is the public house.
The Bleak House?
On the Chertsey Road.
Were there lots of troops in working area?
Oh, yeah. Canadians in England Barracks in particular. Most, I think, all Canadians during the war. Of course, there was Purbright, Deep Cut, Blackdown. The whole area was sort of a military camp, virtually. There were Canadians in other parts over towards, where was it, the other side of Guildford. So, yeah, it was all military, I was saying.
How did the Canadian troops behave?
Pretty well, I think. I think there was no problems. They usually found sort of girlfriends or women whose husbands were away somewhere. You know, there was a lot of that going on, that sort of thing going on. But other than that, I think, you know, they had a reputation for sort of causing trouble in pubs, but I don't know. I was sort of too young to go in the local pub, so our children, they were very good. They always gave us sweets. We used to ask them for gum. I used to smoke these cigarettes called Sweet Caporal, and there was a sort of aircraft recognition picture on the pack, so we were always after these to get the set of Sweet Caporal cigarette packets, you know, they were numbered, sort of 1 to 50 or something. So, yeah, we got on well. We used to go and watch the ENSA shows in England Barracks, which we, of course, we knew our way through the barbed wire. We didn't go in the entrance where the sentries were on duty, so we knew ways through, and we'd sneak into the raw tail in the gymnasium, which is no longer there, of course. So, you know, sometimes we were said, we're told that get the hell out of here, you goddamn kids, you know, that for us. Sometimes they let us stay there, you know. So, you know, we saw quite a few of these shows.
What were they showing?
Well, it was singing comedians. Nothing sort of, you know, that children couldn't watch, really.
Now, At the end of the war, were there any celebrations in Woking?
Oh, yes. D-Day, yes. We all, I think every street had a party. We all went out, got chairs and tables set out on the road, and some bunting and flags. And we all had cakes, sandwiches, you know, food and drink. Yeah, marvellous. And the same for VJ Day.
Now, can you tell me how you came to be in the army yourself?
Yes. I joined up at the age of 18 for 5 years. I wanted to join the army. My father had been in the army. far as I know, I went to Deep Cut, and I said, you know, tell me how to sort of join. And they said, why the hell do you want to join the army for? Go away, sort of thing, you know. Well, they said, they didn't exactly say that. They said, no, we don't sort of recruit people here. So, but they gave me an address. Funny enough, it was in Portsmouth. So I went down to Portsmouth. I think everything was paid for. They gave me a sort of warrant to get down there. And I joined up in Portsmouth. And they give you a sort of an IQ or an intelligence test to see if you can sort of read and write. Sort of, rudimentary medical. See if you've got two arms and two legs, you know. Nothing missing, sort of thing. And you're in, sort of thing. It's been pretty poor not to get in those things.
This was 49 then?
This was 49, yeah. Anyway, so, right. They gave me a warrant to go to Park Hall Camp, Gabowan near Oswestry Street, Shropshire, which was the sort of the basic training. I did the basic training, and during the basic training they ask you what you want to do, and what your preference is, you know. And then they give you sort of further tests, see if you're capable of doing certain things. And he said, well, you might be interested in becoming a surveyor, gunner surveyor. So I thought, oh, fair enough. It turned out this was very interesting. There's a bit of maths involved. And I was sent to a training battery at Lark Hill in
Wiltshire, Salisbury Plain.
I did the course and passed out, and then I got a posting to the Ministry of Supply in Farnborough, and this was at the beginning of guided, when we were starting out using or testing guided weapons. And my job, I was more a civilian. I wore civilian clothes, and the only time I wore a uniform then was to pick my own wages up every week. I was attached to RAE Farnborough. We used to go down to Salisbury Plain, and they had these observation posts, and we used to from these observation posts, we used to photograph these guided weapons. It was like a big television camera. We used what they call kinetheodolites, which I understood were captured from the Germans, who used them during the war.